Welcome back to our ongoing series, Around the Horn with UBS Asset Management's Fixed Income Team. I am pleased to welcome this month's featured speakers, top portfolio manager and business heads from AM's Muni, taxable fixed income and liquidity teams. We'll hear candidly from them on their views on markets and what they believe financial advisors should be focused on within the fixed income space. Joining us today, we have Neil Tabbitt, fixed income SMA specialist, and our moderator for today, Dave Walczak, head of U.S. Money Markets Portfolio Management, Dave Vignolo, head of U.S. Investment Grade Credit, David Michael, portfolio manager for Emerging Market, Patrick Mativich, portfolio manager for U.S. Multi-Sector Bonds, and Lisa DiPaolo, senior municipal bond portfolio manager. As I mentioned, Neil is going to moderate our discussion today, so with that brief introduction, I'll pass it over to you.
Thank you so much, Siobhan. I appreciate the introduction. Good morning, good afternoon, and welcome to what should be another lively episode of Around the Horn. As mentioned by Siobhan, I'll be hosting today. Our usual host, Anthony Leori, traveling. Big shoes to fill, I know, but I'm joined, as always, by a great lineup today. So there's been many times in my long fixed income career where we can go from one month to another month with not having too much to talk to. That's certainly not been the case over the last couple of years, and for sure not been the case since we last spoke back in October. Our discussion in October centered around markets after the first Fed cut, mid-September. Since then, we've had an election, another Fed cut, and a wild ride in the rates market. So if we were looking for a theme for today's call, perhaps it's to expect the unexpected. Trump victory in last week's election may not be a surprise, but the manner of the victory certainly was, and this red wave that we've seen across the country surprised many folks. We've also experienced two Fed cuts in the last couple of months, 50 basis points, 25 basis points, and many would expect us to see rates coming in. 10-year Treasury rates are 70 basis points higher today than they were on September 18th, that was the day of the first Fed cut. Many also expected equity markets to correct from their highs, but now we've seen to gain new momentum there in the equity markets. So all of this has led us once again to this place of elevated uncertainty. So when I put these notes together last night for today's call, the potential for a Fed cut next month had been dialed back with the market pricing in only something like a 50% chance of a 25 basis point cut next month. After today's CPI number, shown bang in line core inflation, markets now pricing an 80% probability. So we're seeing these significant fluctuations in market expectations, and I would expect that continues, as we see new data points going forward. We also see the potential for additional inflationary pressures with the new administration, impact of tariffs, widening deficit, potential tax cuts, increased spending going forward. So all this, again, adding to the precarious nature of the market. We need to determine what impact, if any, a stronger dollar will have on domestic and global fixed income markets. And do we now see this new emphasis on growth and what impact there on both rates and credit? So we've got a lot to unravel, but I am lucky to have some great unravelers on the call with us today. So at this moment, I'll pass the call over to Dave for his comments. Dave Walczak for his comments.
Yeah, thanks, Neil. So I guess I'll start by unraveling kind of our thoughts with the latest Fed meeting here. As you mentioned, obviously they cut by additional 25 basis points, which was largely expected by the market. The decision was unanimous, unlike the meeting before where we did see one dissent, notably from Fed Governor Bowman. So, there wasn't too many notable changes in the statement. There were some minor tweaks that basically Chair Powell chalked up in his press conference to basically just the passage of time, and since the Fed was past their first cut, they could kind of tweak the language a little bit with regards to that. But, other kind of notable comments from his press conference, even with the 25 basis point cut that they did do last week, the FOMC still thinks that policy is restrictive. But he did also clarify by saying, it's not possible to say how precisely restrictive. So, again, I think this reinforces the notion, and what a lot of folks, I think, in the market are grappling with is, okay, where is this neutral rate? So where is kind of, maybe the point that the Fed is ultimately looking to move toward? Chair Powell also said, they're continued to be, data dependent, take, every meeting on a meeting by meeting basis, and not really necessarily set in terms of predetermined path in terms of what they're going to do with each and every meeting. But again, I think the direction of travel is ultimately getting to this this neutral rate. Interestingly, he did seem, a little bit unfazed by the rise in longer term yields. I think there, has been some market chatter in terms of the potential impact, that's causing on financial conditions, obviously with higher rates, potentially, tightening conditions, obviously. But, I think, he had said that, if these moves, prove to be more persistent and material, then the Fed will take them into consideration when thinking about policies. So. Also thought that's a little bit notable there. So now looking forward in terms of, what we're seeing in Fed funds futures, again, the next meeting we're seeing about 21 basis points worth of cuts priced in for December. That moved with the CPI data that we got this morning. And then interestingly, from this point through the end of next year, we're only seeing 75 basis points worth of cuts. So that would take the level of Fed funds at the end of next year to a 380. So we really have seen over the past several weeks, a lot of the easing that was previously priced in by the market kind of been taken out. So, that's something we're keeping a pretty close eye on here, obviously, in the front end as well. In terms of what we're seeing in terms of, broader market flows, I'll kind of focus on money market fund assets. The story, kind of continues, and this has been a theme that we've been noticing in recent months, strong inflows into the product. Interestingly, since the Fed cut rates back on September 18th, we've seen about $280 billion into money market funds here in the U.S. Across the industry, taking, overall money fund assets just under $6.6 trillion. So, we continue to see just a lot of folks, looking to place cash in the front end. But it will be interesting to see, moving forward from here, especially as we look to, see the curve normalize, what potentially that means for flows and other products as well. So with that, I'll pass it over to David Gnola to talk about IG credit.
Yeah, thanks, David. On the investment-grade credit side, with the, the two major events this past week with the Trump winning the White House and the Fed, again, cutting interest rates, 25 basis points. But both of those situations, very positive drivers for investment grade credit. From the Trump winning the White House, two major themes are one, the likelihood of reduced regulation, as well as a reduction in corporate tax rates, very favorable for corporate America. So from a fundamental perspective, things are good from that standpoint, on top of third quarter earnings, which have just kind of come to the conclusion, continue to show another quarter of earnings exceeding expectations. So fundamentals from just the regular corporate growth, economic growth and announcements by the corporate America on top of Trump winning really drove the equity market and corporate bond spreads tighter after the news. Monetary policy, as David said, the Fed cut, the likelihood of another cut in December, so continue to be favorable from a monetary policy perspective. So, that's all good for corporate America. Technicals in the space were over about $340 billion in inflows into investment-grade credit this year. Very strong inflows, and that's really been driven, as we talked about, fundamentals and growth, but really the main top driver is the yield. With this backup in treasury yields over the last, 4 or 5 weeks, corporate yields are now back above 5%. And so at one point we got up to briefly in the upper fives towards six, and about 6 weeks ago, we were in the mid four range. So, when you get above five, there's a lot of interest comes back into the space because historically when you see, yields over 5%, it's from a long-term perspective, a very, attractive entry point for investors. So, from that perspective, we continue to see strong demand, especially in our strategies that have offer longer duration options on the SMA platform. But I would say across the board, strong technicals, strong fundamentals, growth remaining positive. And I think before we talked about, first was recession and or a soft landing, and now it's really recession talks kind of near term seems to be off the table. And now it's really a soft landing or a reacceleration in growth, you know, going forward. But across the board for us, you know, we continue to favor the financial sector. And I think because of the regulations somewhat being reduced with the Trump victory or weakened in terms of its potential additional regulations coming down the pike that really is coming off the table. We continue to favor that sector, and it benefits from a Trump victory in the White House from that, you know, that perspective. As well as, you know, I think what we're going to see is I talk about, you know, the regulations and the reducing the regulations. There's going to be more M&A risk in the sector. I think the managed healthcare industry is probably going to see more M&A risk, and some other sectors are going to see more M&A risk, which really presents opportunities for us to take advantage of those situations, to be proactive and be underweight. Well, hopefully those credits that doesn't benefit from an acquisition or vice versa, being involved with credits that might have been lower rated and were acquired by a higher rated entity, which will benefit greatly from that acquisition. So I think it presents us going into 2025 some real great opportunities with working with our analyst team to take advantage of those situations. You know, outside of that, we continue to favor, you know, kind of the intermediate to the front end of the curve. We continue to expect eventually the treasury curve will normalize. When I say that, you know, the curve will steepen with two-year treasury yields continue to fall more so than 10-year treasury yields. And we normalize back to where we would be a normalized curve in a regular economic environment of positive growth and stable to declining inflation. So we still believe in that premise, and that's how we're positioned in the portfolios. And then outside of that, from a sector perspective, I mentioned an increasing idiosyncratic risk, but really, you know, some of the sectors I think will have a little more, you know, potential stress going into 2025 is the utility sector, because I think we're going to see a lot of supply going forward from the green initiative and as well as building out AI capacity for warehouses. So we continue to maintain a positive view for credit in general, but I think from a spread perspective, our spreads historically are kind of at the tight end of the range when you look back over the years. So really going forward, this is more of a carry income environment, and you know, with, you know, yields over 5%, that's pretty good. And then additional total return opportunities when interest rates eventually fall at some point, you know, going forward. So that's how I kind of look at the credit space in general from that perspective. But investors really, with all the yields that they're currently can lock into their portfolios, are very happy with that type of situation because, as I said, growth is fine, corporate fundamentals are fine, and we haven't seen yields as high since the financial crisis. So that story continues. So, you know, with that, I'll pass it back to Neil and go from there.
I will pass it on to David Michael.
Yep, perfect. Thank you. Emerging markets, the overall risk tone continues to be set by U.S. interest rate volatility and broader market risk. Emerging market spread were able to compress over the last month and offset most of the U.S. Treasury sell-off that we saw before and after President Trump was reelected. Emerging market spreads tightened by about 30 basis points, while U.S. Treasuries widened between 30 and 40 basis points. This left total returns down between 25 and 50 bips on 1 month. Emerging market debt supply remains subdued in November and October. As we approach the end of the year, our expectation for net negative supply is becoming more of a reality. This is a positive technical driver that continues to support emerging market bonds as investors have more cash on hand than readily available new bonds. China continues to announce additional stimulus measures. The consistent and reliable support that has been coming from the Chinese government has helped improve domestic sentiment. This is reflected in stability of domestic consumption and also stabilizing of housing sales volumes and prices, though this stabilization is at low levels. There's expectations of tariffs once President Trump takes office. We don't really expect this to have much of an impact on the domestic sentiment as the Chinese government has continued to advise that additional stimulus will be coming. In October, the IMF held their annual meetings in Washington, D.C. And it was a good reminder that a year ago at the IMF meetings, most of that time was focused on issues surrounding the ability of countries like Kenya and El Salvador to be able to meet their debt payment schedules, as well as Egypt and Nigeria, who had some very large deteriorating external balances and internal balances. All of these countries saw remarkable turnarounds and have all successfully refinanced their debt obligations, devalued their currencies, and embarked on ambitious reforms, which have led to spread compression and risk premium. After President Trump was reelected, emerging market credit spreads tightened, as I said before. EM high yield outperformed, EMIG, and even countries like Mexico that are considered to be disadvantaged by a Trump presidency all performed very well. Even after the U.S. election, we saw net inflows into some of the largest emerging market ETFs. Although EMFX is likely to be impacted by most of the headlines around tariff and trade negotiations, post-elections, EMFX outperformed developed market FX rates. We see positive tail risks that can emerge in the over the coming year if geopolitical tensions ease and or there are ceasefires negotiated. This would be a positive tail risk for EM. The consensus on Trump policy implications and inflation, the impact on the dollar may be challenged and are expected to remain volatile. This again underpins the importance of having an active manager for emerging market risk. In this environment, we believe idiosyncratic stories in emerging markets are likely to perform well. Now let me hand it off to Patrick for an update from our multi-sector team.
Yeah, thanks, David. And by virtue of being on with the subject matter experts that cover the sectors we actually invest in, thought it sound this month to focus in specifically on rates markets. And Neil really nailed it at the top. What a difference just a month, or in this case, a quarter makes. Q3 was quite kind to rates markets. Q4, needless to say, has been a bit of a challenge, and that's probably an understatement. Since October 1st, for context, Treasury yields are higher by some 63 basis points on the 2-year, 64 on the 10-year, and 47 basis points on the 30-year. And it's important to note that only partially erases the rally we've observed since mid-year, June 30th, though admittedly we are breaking through early July levels on some of the longer tenors. Why such a strong retracement? And we see three main culprits in our view. First, arguably the market had grown overzealous in its pricing of future policy, and it's not exactly a new phenomenon for rates markets or any market really to have the pendulum swing too far from time to time. At September month end, the implied policy rate for Fed fund futures was to be 4.12 by year end and 3.82% by the January 2025 meeting. Yesterday, those implied rates reached 4.43 and 4.35 respectively. Said another way, the market effectively cleansed 225 basis point cuts from the January 2025 calculus and just the last 6 weeks or so. And similarly, looking at the specific meeting that Mr. Walczak cited, the end of the year 2025, we've gone from an implied rate of 294 to now 381. The second factor, measures of economic data continue to reflect resiliency here, and specifically the labor market and the U.S. consumer remain very much well intact. On the labor side, we have unemployment that's failed to budge above 4.1%, which is historically low. Weekly jobless claims continue to do very little, hovering around that 220,000 initial claims mark week after week. Job openings, meantime, remain high versus pre-COVID levels, and even sentiment as related to the jobs market has come in quite strong of late in survey data. And then on the consumer side, same thing. Retail sales figures continue to exhibit strength in data released mid-October. We had a personal spending read that showed upside surprise and upward revisions, and even the consumption data for Q3 showed a much higher revision in the final read to 3.7%. We all well know how important consumption is as related to the engine of the U.S. economy. The last and third culprit, maybe the most obvious one, we've had a red sweep in Republican control of government that's presumed to offer more by way of growth than inflation, raises the specter of increasing deficits, and both would theoretically place upward pressure on the long end. And notably on that point, rates markets began trending upward in earnest around the same time betting sites began to heavily favor Trump's presidency chances. All that said, though, today there are reasons to be constructive on rates over the more medium and longer term. For one, the U.S. is trailing the broader global central bank easing tact, really outside only the Bank of Japan. And now the easing cadence expectations that we see now here in the U.S., they're much more reasonable and much more in line with where median policymaker expectations are via the most recently released dot plots. We've also shown meaningful progress across the inflation complex, something Neil Kashkari recently noted. Now, year-on-year core PCE has fallen from a cycle high of 565, some 3% to now 265. And similarly, year-on-year core CPI, we just got an update this morning, that's similarly fallen from a high of 6.6 to now 3.3%, so effectively cut in half. Higher rates also haven't deterred fixed income investors from plowing assets into the space. And lastly, the election uncertainty is now in the rearview mirror, and that's already paid dividends in the form of bringing down at least rate volatility metrics like the MOVE Index. So for now, our desk maintains what we call a healthy respect for momentum. We're looking for a catalyst to unmoor what's been strong recent upward pressure. Our risk budget pertaining to rates is low at present. In other words, conviction is low, and we're close to neutral across our broader book of business, but still apt to trade rates from the longer side eventually, looking for better entry and other conditions of ours to be met. But again, want to exhibit respect for momentum and believe patience and prudence are equivalent at this stage of the game. So with that, I'll turn it to my good friend Lisa DiPaolo on municipals.
We could definitely say the muni market experienced ongoing volatility and pressure in October and as we headed into this month. Just looking back, municipal bond performance was negative in October, with October's losses wiping out a good portion of the year's gains we saw. According to Bloomberg, this marked the third largest October loss since 2002 and the first posted loss since May of this year. Really weak technical factors, just coupled with a sell-off in rates, had a direct negative impact on performance. And looking at muni supply this year, it turned out to be much higher than investors expected, surpassing last year's issuance by more than 30%. Normally, October has historically been a larger new issuance month, and this October was certainly no exception. A lot of issuers, they traditionally are anxious just to front load and price deals prior to the holidays. And this year, we had the added attraction of issuers just getting in front of that presidential election. Additionally, a number of refunding deals ended up being pulled out of the market as rate volatility forced some deals to be postponed. So as a result, investors, including ourselves, were welcomed with higher yields, better relative value ratios, and a large concessions on primary issue deals as we closed out the month of October. And as we headed into this month, obviously during the week of the presidential election and Federal Reserve rate cut brought heightened rate volatility that I think was expected. Following the election results, muni bonds sold off midweek and benchmark yields finished 16 to 17 basis points higher before we saw a sharp rally at the end of last week, which resulted in 10 to 12 basis point adjustments across the curve. So it fully recovered the losses from the sell-off that we saw earlier in the week. We saw munis rebound as yields adjusted higher to near high levels this year. And just amidst the lighter supply, demand increased as a lot of investors just flooded back into the market to take advantage of these higher yields. Additionally, muni outperformance across the curve moved valuations lower. End of the week last week, we saw adjustments to 62 to 69% for 10 years and in, and 85% in that 30-year area. So the tone in the market has turned positive as we head towards year-end, as the market takes into account higher redemption dollars, strong mutual fund inflows. We saw last week the 19th straight week of Lipper inflows to date, and a lighter new issuance calendar as we head into the rest of the year. As we look at November's performance so far, munis are outperforming treasuries month and year to date. The Bloomberg Muni Index today reported a positive 0.57% month to date and returning 1.38% year to date. Right now, we're seeing approximately $21 billion estimated in new issuance for this month, and reinvestment dollars are expected to increase to $37 billion, so that would leave net supply less than demand, which could lead to stronger technicals with yields moving lower. I'd say any rebound in supply may be impeded just by the limited number of
8 weeks left in November. So after the shortened week of Thanksgiving, there's only 3 full weeks left in December. And as we just look the results from the election impact in the muni market, I'd say municipal investors are increasingly focused on federal fiscal policy, especially the impact, as usual, on tax exemption. Tax policy changes will be a major focus just in terms of longer-term impacts on the muni market, as well as Trump's plan to raise tariffs, which could lead to inflation, widen federal deficits. So could see some direct impact on muni and treasury yields moving higher looking ahead. I'd say right now the market is somewhat stabilized. There was a firmer tone this week. Treasuries rallied at the front end earlier following the release of the CPI data, really meeting expectations and bolstering the odds of another Fed cut before the end of the year. In terms of our strategies, we still maintain our barbell strategy, overweighting the front end of the yield curve 3 years and in, and longer end 17 and 25 years. We took advantage of a stronger buying opportunity recently, remaining very active at these higher yields, and in particular, finding a lot of value in the primary market. Definitely seeing a bit of a pickup in yields and spreads versus secondary offerings. As we've stated before, we've continued to swap out of ERDNs into 1 to 2 year fixed rate bonds just in order to lock in more attractive fixed rate yields without adding duration. Cash equivalent securities with VRDNs still attractive. October VRDN yields averaged 3.36%. So roughly on par with where they have been historically. And I just say, as we see some normalization in the muni yield curve, we may look to reposition heading into this, the rest of the year, possibly reducing exposure in that 1 year bucket. We still have 35% waiting there. And moving out to other areas of the curve, which we will address at our monthly investment meeting next week. And I think I'm going to hand it back to Neil now.
Thanks, Lisa. I appreciate it. Great stuff from everybody, as always.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.